You talk to me.
I like Master Blaster.
I just can't. It did nothing for me, so maybe.
Just the next day, someone at work was talking about the third Thunderdome. And I thought, maybe
it's just like you have someone who's
maybe I just didn't get it.
So we're letting the rules on the
Okay. Vocabulary. On page 145. Agapao. Daimonion. Zeteo.
Zeteo.
Kaleo.
Kaleo.
Laleo.
Laleo.
Oida.
Oida.
Hatan.
Hatan.
Pleon.
Pleon.
Pleirao.
Pleirao.
Poieto.
Poieto.
And Teireto.
Teireto.
Okay, you notice all of these verbs, or most of them here, have, quite a few of them, have a vowel in front of the personal ending. Agapao. And kaleo, laleo. This chapter is about what we call contract verbs. But I just noticed that one of my favorite professors at Talbot wrote the Exegetical Insight, Dr. Arnold. Who is now the dean of Talbot. How about that? His Ephesians class always fills up really quickly. And if you pay attention to commentaries on Ephesians, you'll see Clinton Arnold pretty often.
Never mind.
Okay. He says here on page 139, the present active indicative often has an imperfective voice. That is, it conveys the idea of ongoing or continuous action. When the Apostle Paul wrote his first letter to the Thessalonian Christians, he wanted to reassure these new believers that they were not forgotten, that he and his companions still cared deeply for them. He tells them, "We always thank God for all of you, mentioning you in our prayers." Paul expresses his constant practice of giving thanks to God by using the present active indicative verb eucharistoumen. The verb could also, of course, be interpreted as simple or undefined action with no overtones of continuous prayer. The adverb kantate, however, reinforces our impression that Paul is stressing that he prays regularly for the Thessalonians. It is also likely that in using the plural we, Paul is implying that he met often with Silas and Timothy to pray for these dear people. Certainly, Paul also remembered the Thessalonians in his private times of prayer. Far from being victimized by a group of itinerant moral preachers who sought their money and food, the Thessalonians were evangelized by a trio of men who proclaimed to them the living and true God. These were men whose lives had been touched deeply by the risen Christ, and they poured themselves out to the Thessalonians in a loving and caring way. Their abrupt departure did not indicate a lack of concern. On the contrary, they were forced to leave, and now they pray together constantly to the living God for these fledgling and vulnerable believers.
What does fledgling mean?
Struggling, you know, in their faith. They're trying to endure hardship or making their faith sure. Introduction, 17:1, the contrasts. Do we have a chapter here on contracts, too? Mm-hmm. Did you all read it?
He gave us the syllabus last week.
No, it was a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
chose last week, right?
What?
We only got the syllabus last week, right?
We get this 2 weeks.
Yeah, been more than a week.
It was last week. We wouldn't have been able to read all these chapters, right?
We got it last week.
Yeah,
we got it all week.
Okay.
No. You guys had the print of the syllabus 2 weeks ago, right? It was like our fourth week of class.
I think we've done it last week.
Yeah, this is our fourth week of class, but we got it last week.
You only got it last week?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's all I'm saying.
Remember you were getting in trouble for not having it done.
Well, yeah.
Almost
getting in trouble. That's relative.
I just like the color of the book.
Okay. Let's actually start with this reading and see if that eases us into contrast a little bit better. Contraction. Contract verbs kill no one. Interesting subtitle. John 21:15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Is that in the Kindle edition? If you've been around the church for any length of time, chances are you've heard one or more sermons on the difference between God's love for us and our love for God. Often these sermons take as their text John 21, where Jesus is speaking to Peter and asks him the question, "Do you love me?" Agapes. More than these. The speaker will often point out that the word that Peter uses to answer Jesus' question is a different one than the word that Jesus used in the query. Peter says, "You know, hati philo se, you know that I love you." So he uses the word philo there instead of agapao. This difference is often asked to bear a great deal more weight than is possible. One must always be careful when the difference between two words, particularly synonyms, becomes the most important point to the entire passage. One must realize that the words, and particularly synonyms, have overlapping meaning depending on their context. If you were asked about the difference between a trunk and a suitcase, you might say that they are basically the same thing. In certain contexts, there might be a difference, but for the most part, the meaning of the words overlap. The same is true of these Greek words that have the meaning love. It is almost certainly wrong to build an exegetical case, especially in John's Gospel, because he is so fond of synonyms, based on the difference between two overlapping words. For our purpose, this has been important to note several things. First, Peter does not say that he loves Christ, and that is the point of the narrative. He does say that he loves Christ. Sorry, I read that wrong. First, Peter does say that he loves Christ, and that is the point of the narrative. Peter has fallen, but he can now return to his walk with the Lord. All Christians fall, but God in his graciousness picks us up and sets us on the road to the celestial city again. Pilgrim's Progress there. Second, as an exegetical practice, the context is always much more important than the difference, usually very small, between synonyms. So when you are interpreting, context is more weighty than the differences between two synonyms. Third, both of these words for love are contract verbs. In our society, there are different meanings for the term contract. One of those meanings, when connected with the word killer, denotes a person who kills others for money. Hence his subtitle for this chapter. I want to assure you that while contract verbs can be difficult, they will not kill you. Most of you will not even be maimed. Assuring, right? Jesus asks Peter if he loves him. If you love God and his word, you must be prepared to work hard to understand it. It may be difficult, tiring, and sometimes even, oh no, boring. But you must be willing to play the scales before you will be able to improvise jazz. Oh. Okay, definition. Contract verbs are those verbs whose stems, does everyone remember what a stem is?
Yes.
Whose stems end in alpha, epsilon, or omicron. You will learn when you begin to study verbs that most Greek verbs have stems that end in a consonant. This consonant is connected to the verbal ending by a connecting vowel. Because the contract verb's stem ends in a vowel rather than a consonant, two vowels come together. When these two vowels are placed side by side, they will contract or get together to form a new vowel. This new connecting vowel is the only thing that changes in the contract verb. All other endings that you know remain the same. Oves a omnes. Similarities. One of the things that makes contract verbs so difficult is that there's nothing quite like them in the English language. We do not have contract verbs in our tongue, and thus we must make a special effort to understand what is happening to the Greek verb here. Differences. Because of the two vowels coming together, the main difference that you will see is that the connecting vowels seem to change drastically in use. Think of the two vowels in the contract verbs as boxers. Both want to win and become the connecting vowel, but there usually can be only one. Thus, they have to fight it out for the honor of being the connecting vowel. There are a number of ways that you, the judge of the fight, can tell who wins. First, you may or probably will not want to win the chart that appears in many first-year textbooks. This chart has a huge number of possibilities and will show the student which vowel wins under any circumstances. Think of it as a sort of a fight card. Second way to judge the fight is to learn the five rules that Mauss gives in his textbook. This is much easier than using the complete chart and will allow you to make the proper judgment in virtually every situation. Third, a simple mnemonic may be of some help. While this mnemonic will not solve all the contract problems, it will help with a great many of them. Think of the E class vowels as easy. They almost always lose the fight. Think of the A class vowels as aggressive. They win over the easy vowels, but sometimes lose out in other cases. Think of the O class vowels as overcomers. They are very rarely beaten in the fight. While this mnemonic will not always work, it is a good rule of thumb in dealing with the fight under difficult circumstances. Here's the good news. The good news about these contract verbs is that you are not being asked to compose Greek. Ponder that. You're not being asked to compose Greek. Or write your own, translate into Greek. While your teacher may have you do a few compositions just to make sure that you understand the concept, your primary goal will be to recognize the verbs after the fight rather than judge who won. This recognition is much easier than judging. And if you work hard for a couple of hours, you will be able to recognize most contracts without any trouble. Don't worry, the contract is not for your life. Uh-huh. Okay. This can kind of be an intense chapter. And it's just giving us the tools to know what words we're dealing with, what vocabulary words we're dealing with when we see it in an inflected form. So we'll see verbs inflected, but we have to know what the stem is to get the meaning. And we have to know what the personal ending is so that we know person and number. So when we see a form, we're trying to determine person and number and stem. We have to know if it's a contract, what's happening in the contraction. That's what this chapter is all about. Page 140 in our grammar, under introduction, he says contract verbs are verbs whose stems end in alpha, epsilon, and omicron. That final vowel is called the contract vowel. For example, the verb agapao has a stem ending in what?
Alpha.
Contract verbs follow the standard rules for verbs, but there's one additional point to learn. When the final stem vowel comes into contact with the connecting vowel, they contract. The two vowels will join and often form a vowel or a diphthong. For example, poi eth amen becomes poi umen. Poi umen. Contract verbs are categorized according to their final stem vowel. Those three. What is encouraging about contract verbs is that all alpha contracts behave the same, as do all epsilon and all omicron contracts. In other words, all contract verbs with stems ending in alpha form their different inflected endings the same way. Once you learn the forms of agapao, you know the inflection pattern for all other alpha contracts. So any of them that end in alpha, you'll be able to recognize. 17.3, contract verbs are common, and you need to be able to figure out what vowels led to a certain contraction. If you cannot, you will not be able to discover the lexical form of the verb, and thus its meaning. For example, if you find the form poiete, the epsilon iota, which makes an A sound, the epsilon iota is going to cause problems unless you recognize that epsilon iota can be the result of the contraction of two epsilons. Then you can see that the poi eta is second person plural of an epsilon contract verb. Now, what's happening between it getting to poieto and poi eta? There's contraction happening. But when you look at that word, what do you see? What stands out to you?
Which word are you think?
Mm-hmm.
The tape has been dead. Mm-hmm. Two epsilons and two iotas.
Poi a te. You guys say what? To me, I agree. This is what stands out to me. So, what do we already know here, just from that?
Second person plural.
We recognize we're dealing with a second person plural verb. Then we see this poi right here, and you're learning your vocabulary, and that's stem. What word does that come from? It's in our new vocabulary, page 146. What part do you notice on there? Hello? What else do you see on there? You see this right here, right? That's the first person singular ending, right? So the question is how did our connecting valve get from epsilon to epsilon iota? How did we get that? So this whole chapter is explaining to us what's happening here. When we bring our endings and we bring our stem. But all of us know the meaning of this word, I do or make, from the stem itself. And we recognize with present active indicative, we recognize we're dealing with person and number with the ending. But this chapter wants us to help understand the contraction that's happening with the vowel there. Because it ends in an epsilon, this is an epsilon contract vowel. So, when we have agapao, what kind of contract vowel is that?
Alpha.
An alpha contract vowel. Because we have the stem, and then it ends in an alpha. But here's the personal ending, right? So when this alpha and this ending come together, something's going to happen. There's going to be contraction taking place. And that's, this whole chapter is just explaining the rules of contraction so that you can pick out what the word is. Okay? So, this chapter is not teaching us how to translate better. It's not teaching us how to read Greek in a new way. It's not introducing a tense, a voice, or a mood. All it's doing now is expanding the kinds of words that we can translate from because they use stems that end in a vowel. So it's kind of an intermediate chapter. Most of these chapters will be introducing to us a tense. Present, aorist, perfect. You know, that's a tense. Or will introduce us to a voice. Active, passive, or a mood, what we're just saying in particular. So this is kind of like a little intermediate chapter between that. As soon as we finish this chapter, we understand how stems ending in alpha, epsilon, or omicron function. We go right back to introducing more concepts about voice. So the next chapter after this is the present middle passive indicative. Being it. We have to go through the Red Sea to get to
America.
The other side.
Yeah.
So it looks, it feels difficult, but we're not learning any new real grammar here. We're just learning about some recognizing some forms. Okay? So I'm saying all that to help you be more at ease. Yeah. Good sigh really there. Okay. I think I left off at the third paragraph there, right?
Yes, 17 membranes.
Often, you will discover that several vowel combinations could have given rise to the same contractive form. For example, u is formed from the contractions of e-o, a-e, and a-a. If you see poi umen, the connecting vowel and personal ending are amen. But what would the lexical form have been? Poi-e-o or poi-a-o? Now, because you're learning your vocabulary, you would know. Poi-e-o. But if you just saw the contracted form, you could get to that form a couple different ways, potentially. Knowing your vocabulary would help you know which one it was. You need contractions only in two tenses, the present and the imperfect. In the other tenses, the contract vowel lengthens and there's no contraction, so it's easier. But more about this later. Having said this, I do not want to overstate the significance of understanding contraction. While knowing what vowels form the contraction is important for discovering the lexical form of the word, in most cases it is not significant for parsing. For example, can you parse the following forms, person and number, even if you do not know what vowels form the contraction? Koyumen. What's the ending there?
First.
Men, right? Mm-hmm. What's the ending on pleurute?
Second.
Te. What's the ending on agapas?
Singular.
See? Knowing the true endings, right?
First.
What is the ending on poyo?
First singular.
No. Yeah. What is the ending on agaposi?
Third
plural. Nsi, right? You see the C there. Okay. So there's learning the true endings. You're starting to see why that's important. If you learned it the traditional way in Greek, like I did. You learn the connecting vowel as part of the ending. Then when you came to contracts, you had a whole other set of endings to learn, depending upon what the vowel was. So that's three sets of endings. But if you learn the true endings, like we are here, nothing significant. Mente insi. It already makes it easier to recognize.
Wi-Fi worker.
Alright. Rules of contraction. Following are the rules showing what contractions are caused by what vowel combination. There are a few other possibilities, but you'll be shown them as we come across them. Rules 1 and 2 are the most common. Rule 7 governs contractions of diphthongs, and illustrations of contracting diphthongs are listed throughout the rules. You may also notice that the vowels listed as contracting in rules 1 through 6 are not the real personal endings, but are altered personal endings you learned for luo. Rule 8 explains this. Okay, so number 1, u is torn from et off. A-et and a-ah. So, look at the far right. Okay? The far right shows you hoi eh amen. That is the stem ending in an epsilon. Omicron being the contract, being the vowel, what we call the connecting vowel, and then the ending. What happens when epsilon and omicron touch? They lengthen to the diphthong, u. The next one, play ra ate, you have an omicron and an epsilon touching, that also becomes an u. Play ra amen, the two omicrons become play rumen. So this is the Greeks kind of smoothing out the sounds here. 2, A is formed from epsilon, epsilon. So poi, et, and then you have ete. What happens when the epsilon, epsilon touches? You have them contract to epsilon, iota.
Epsilon, epsilon?
Mm-hmm.
Far right. The epsilon,
far right. So to the far right.
On this
number 2.
Oh, we're number 2.
Yeah. Poye ete. Becomes poye, poeta. 3, omega is formed by almost any combination of omicron or omega with another vowel, with any other vowel except for rule 1. So aga pa amen becomes aga po men. So the omicron and something else becomes omega. We have a special situation in the lexical form of the contract, the verbs. The alpha, epsilon, or omicron of the stem is listed in the lexical form because you need to know what the vowel is, agapao. However, next page, when the word occurs in the text in the first person singular, it will have the contracted, it will have contracted to the forms in the paradigm. Okay, so look over at 17.6 to see what he's talking about. See the paradigm for the present active indicative of contract vowels? The first column, what ending are we dealing with? The alpha contract vowel, right? Alpha, omega. Look at the present active indicative first person singular. What is it?
Agapo.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's the first person singular. Agapo. When you see the first person singular of this word in the Bible, it will be agapo. But what he was talking about on the previous page is what will you actually find in the lexicon?
Agapao.
Go to your lexicon.
Oh,
with
the alpha.
Way back.
In front of it?
Yes. So, on page 395, the fourth entry is agapao. Does everyone see that? You will not find agapao in the Bible. Why?
Because
it contracts.
Because it contracts the alpha and omega. But in the lexicon, they show it as in the uncontracted form. So that you know you're dealing with an alpha contract verb here. So typically in the lexicon, you will see the first person singular form of a verb. And in the Bible, it would just be agapo. Because the contraction will have already taken place in the inflected form. But in the lexicon, it will show you the uncontracted form. Agapao. Huh. You go to back to page, keep your hand on the lexicon. Go back to page 143, the second column is epsilon contract verbs, right? What is the first person singular form? Oyo. What would be the uncontracted form of that? Poieto. If you went to the lexicon, you will find the entry as poieto, uncontracted. What would you find in the New Testament though?
Poieto.
You will have contracted. These are the uncontracted forms that you'll find in the lexicon. But when you find it in the New Testament, the contraction will have taken place. So the first person singular, agapao. This is what will be in the Bible. contractual taking place. We want to look it up in the lexicon. They do us a favor and put it into the uncontracted form so we can see we're dealing with an alpha contract and an epsilon contract.
The one question I have is, in the lexicon, why are they doing it that way? To do us a favor, or...?
Because when we get to other tenses, okay. Right, he said we won't have contraction. So it's good to know what this vowel is. And that's the trait that it will follow when it inflects. And we're looking at these rules here to know, as far as understanding what kinds of change we'll see. We'll see anytime it's an alpha word, ends in an alpha stem, it'll do this. Anytime it's an epsilon stem, it'll do this. So what we're looking for is just a pattern. Okay, number four. Alpha is formed from an alpha epsilon. So, agapotec becomes agapotec, and agapae becomes agapa. So you can see that it retains that yoda, but it drops down and becomes a subscript of yoda, agapa. What is the true ending? This right here, right? So they don't want to lose that, do they?
What did you just do?
Okay. See that in a third person singular. Third person singular. What is our true ending of the third person singular?
Yoda.
Yoda. Right? That is what we got to make sure we're seeing. Here's the connecting vowel, epsilon, right? Okay. Epsilon is the connecting vowel. Yoda is the ending. What's the rule? The rule is alpha and epsilon forms a what? I'm looking upside down.
Makes the alpha.
The rule is alpha is formed from alpha epsilon. Will form a what?
An alpha.
So,
agapa.
So we still have our ending here. But they didn't want to form another diphthong here. So it drops down here. So if you, and they also do us a favor, and they add what? A circumflex. So we go, aha. Something's happening here. Circumflex. Contraction's happening. So this is where you would see agapa with a diphthong, like, or not a diphthong, but with a subscript yoda. And you would say, what is this? Is this the date of case? You might be confused by that. But you would say, no, I know that this is a verb. Ah, there is. And you go, remember, yes, agapao is a contract. Circumflex contraction. Agapao. What are my endings? My endings, nothing, sigma, yoda. Third person, singular. He loves. He is loving. This is just more, you know, becoming a better detective of what's going on here. I'm eliminating possibilities and getting to the right answer. Okay. Do we do this on all verbs?
Conjugate
verbs. Verbs and then the alpha, epsilon, or omicron. Okay. Number five. Eta is formed from epsilon and alpha. So, you have to the far right, his arrows are going right to left. Poi, F, son. This is not a form we know, the psi ending. This is from another quadrant, the first landing chart. Anyway, though, all he wants to draw our attention to is that we've got the contraction happening, epsilon and alpha, the sigma drops out, then you have epsilon alpha, then you go to the next one, poi eta yoda, so poi ai. What happens when the eta and you have the yoda at the end there? The yoda doesn't want to hang at the end, so it subscripts, poi a. So all we're doing right now is reviewing the what's happening morphologically. Yeah. Is this gonna affect your ability to translate? No. You're gonna know what the stem is, you're gonna know what your endings are. And there's gonna be this weird vowel thing in the middle. And you're like, that is not a normal contract vowel. This must be a contract. This is not a normal vowel. This must be a contract vowel here. Yes?
The circumflex is an indicator that it's been contracted, or it's a contraction.
It could be.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All right.
In English, there's the apostrophe.
Yes.
But not all.
English is looking confusing.
Oh, man.
What is this? Okay, let's just get through these so that we can get back. We don't get stuck in the fog. We want to drive through it. Okay, miscellaneous. You have omicron, epsilon, yoda becoming oi. So, an example, you have play Roy Ace becoming play. Play Royce. Seven, the contraction of diphthongs. What happens with a diphthong depends upon whether the contract vowel and the first vowel of the diphthong are the same or different vowels. So subscript or subpoint A, the contract vowel and the first vowel of the diphthong are the same, they simplify. So poi F ace just becomes poi ace. Is it a matter of the Greeks not wanting to syllabify all these vowels? B, if the contract vowel and the first vowel of the diphthong are different, they contract. So pop A becomes agapop. Eight, contract verbs contract as if the true personal endings are those visible in the present active indicative. So, A-O, A-Ace, A-A, A-Gapo, A-Gapas, A-Gapa. Be sure to learn these rules exactly. You'll be meeting other contracted forms, and if you know the rules, you'll be able to figure them out. So you can go meditate, and Alpha is formed from Alpha Epsilon.
This is a page for we're going to have to keep going back to.
Oh, yeah.
When you are parsing and you are trying to figure out where the contract vowel and the connecting vowel and the true ending are coming together and creating an explosion together, you will probably have to come back here and review what is contracting to what. Look at the halftime review. Of the seven rules, the first five are the most important. So this is a very good summary right here in this little box. U is formed from e and O-O, or A-A. A is formed from e. Omega is formed from almost any combination of Omicron or Omega with any other vowel. Alpha is formed from Alpha Epsilon. Eta is formed from Epsilon Alpha. So that's where I would probably let my eyes go right there first. If I was trying to figure out, hey, I've got this inflected form. I kind of see the ending, and I kind of see the stem, but I'm not sure if this is an Alpha Epsilon or Omicron contract ending. I'm not sure what's going on with this contraction here. I would go there first. The paradigm is good to see it in real life. Look at the Alpha contract stem words. Agapo, agapas, agapa, agapomen, agapatet, agaposi, poeo, poes, poe, poiumen, poete, and poiusi. Omicron contract. Pleiro, pleirois, pleiroi, pleirumen, pleirute, and pleirusi. So in all of those, you can see that true ending. And then you can see the stem, the meaning of the word, and it's just a matter of understanding that we're having contraction taking place here. We don't see our normal connecting vowels because they've contracted with the stem vowel. Okay? All right. Characteristics of contract verbs. There will almost always be a circumflex over the contracted vowels in the present indicative. Notice that the endings are nearly the same even when a contraction is not taking place. The omega is the first person singular ending. The sigma is still present for the second person singular ending. The plural endings are virtually the same. Concentrate on those similarities. 17.8. Be sure to remember the rules for the connecting vowel. If you see agapate, you may recognize the personal ending as te. That is the verb agapao, agapeo, or agapao. Since, you remember what the rules are?
No.
Remember the rules for the connecting vowel?
Alpha.
Remember that little section?
Yeah, it has to be an alpha and epsilon for it to make the alpha, right?
Look at
rule number 4.
No. He says, remember the rules for the connecting bell, not for contracting, for connecting bells. Back on page 132, paragraph 16.5. The connecting vowel is the vowel that connects the verbal stem to the personal ending. In the indicative mood, if the personal ending begins with a mu or nu, the connecting vowel is what? Omicron. If the connecting vowel in every other is case is epsilon. If no personal ending is used, the connecting vowel can be either omicron or epsilon. So that's just how do you know, trivia-wise, what the connecting vowel is going to be. Depends on what follows it. So, how are you going to know? Is it agapao, agapeo, or agapao? You're going to know that because you're somewhat familiar with how the connecting vowels work. The real way to know what's going on here is to know your vocabulary. If you know that that's agapao, then you're not guessing eo or apo. Alright, bullet points. Since the personal ending begins with a tau, the connecting vowel must be an epsilon. Since e is formed by epsilon epsilon, you know the verb cannot be an epsilon contract. Since u is formed by omicron epsilon, you know the verb cannot be an omicron contract. Therefore, the stem must be an alpha contract on the agapao. All that's going on right at this point is he's explaining to us the morphology. He's just showing us why. It's like studying the chain reaction of, like, if you're studying a car, and you wanted to know why this part and this part together give you this together. It's like the math component to it. What's really important is to know your vocabulary and know your personal endings. That's the most important thing. Nothing, sigma, iota, nine, tag, and z. That and knowing the vocab. You can deduce everything else. You can figure everything else out. You'll see this when you get to parsing. The endings will stand out to you. What is this whole chapter solving for us?
The morphology.
The morphology is helping us. This is about morphology. Morphology is helping us solve what problem? What word am I dealing with? This is just explaining how you get back to whatever that word was. You'll see the ending, and now you're just trying to figure out, what lexical word am I dealing with here? That's what this whole chapter is trying to help you get to. And just making your brain a noodle.
Can we liken the explanation of this to, like, what, like in Transformers, when Bumblebee goes from like a car to an actual Bumblebee? Is that would that illustrate the work?
Yeah, does it work for you?
Kind of. Yes. Just want to make sure it's a good illustration. So when I look at a word, I'm like, all right, this is not a bumblebee. This is a car.
Yeah, you have your reflective.
There's more than this. Yeah.
You have your reflective. You have your change.
Yeah.
What did that come from?
Yes. Oh. Okay. Now we're dealing with the what's the good side?
No.
The bad.
You took your analogy. Okay. I don't really want to belabor this too much. I would rather have you go to the exercise, go to the parsing. You would look at the first one, and you would say, "La lumen."
La lumen.
Can you tell the person a number from that?
La
lumen. What is the person?
First person.
This is first person.
Plural.
Plural, right? What's tense voice mood? We don't really have any other choice, do we?
No, which I love that. Okay.
Next week that changes.
Unfortunately.
Now, the lexical form. This is where we get into the oom part there. See the circumflex?
Yeah.
This is not like luo man, where we have this nice little omicron here as a connecting vowel. We've got this big diphthong. So this whole chapter is explaining how we got to oo. What is the word that la lumen comes from?
La lu.
It could be potentially a contraction. It could be la o. La le-o, la le-o. How do we know what it is? You could go, you would have to deduce, going like he did in the book, from right to left, and say, when I've got an omicron and an upsilon, how could I have gotten to that combination? And you might work your way back. Mm-hmm. But, if you follow my advice, you've studied your vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And you know there's no such word as la-le-o. And there's no such word as la-la-o. It's what?
La-le-o.
Epsilon. Now, if you want to understand how in the first person you got to this now in the first person plural, you could go back and look at the combination of what happens when an epsilon contract touches the connecting vowel omicron. It ends up with this diphthong oo. You go back to those rules and you could figure out how it got to that contraction. But if you study your vocabulary, you know that this could only come from la la.
This is a stupid question. Don't do it. But is there any way that you can write this word and then deduce that? Just say because, or would we have to like have to go through all the rules and look at that stuff? Would you be able to easily do that just so we can like physically see?
Yeah, we could. We could.
Or if it, but if it's.
We could do a process of elimination and do the long math here. But I don't feel like it. Because all I want you to know is know your vocabulary. Know your vocabulary and the tendencies. And if you go back, remember in the halftime review, he has the simplified form of the rules there.
Yeah.
If you're a little confused, you could go back there and you could see what the basic contractions are. But there's only one la-le-o. There's not a la-la-o and there's not a la-a-o. There's only la-e-o. La-le-o. Yes.
And so we know that because the ending is men. And the connecting vowel with that is on the front.
Right.
So then we can go.
Yeah, if you went back here and you looked at
16.5 and then the
rule, this would be an omicron and an epsilon. So this is rule number one. Mu is formed from epsilon, omicron, omicron, epsilon, and omicron, omicron. Right? So if we did it before it contracts, guys are coming to do what you ask now.
Okay. Are we doing the 1 through 7 on the translations and we're doing all 10 parsings probably? I got it.
You got to go? 1 through 7. You're a bonus man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Unmerited.
There's the lexical entry for this word, right?
Right.
Okay. So we're going to take off the personal ending. There's your epsilon contract.
Stem.
The stem ends in epsilon. Right? Okay. What is the personal ending for the first person plural?
Men.
Men.
Second person.
Men.
Plural.
What is the connecting vowel? Because it was before a mu,
it's what?
Omicron. Now, we're not going to see this. We're going to see that. So what happens when an epsilon contract touches an omicron connecting vowel?
It obviously becomes a omicron. Epsilon. Oh.
Yep. So this is this whole chapter right here, is these rules of understanding how you get to this.
What rule is that? Does anyone know?
Rule number one.
Number one.
Kind of you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to be looking at a lot.
Okay? So when you're parsing, you're not used to seeing this. You're like, wow, that's kind of weird. But I do see the men there. So at this point, we've only learned the 600. So that's pretty easy to figure out.
So for all the other words, can we cover up?
This is nothing. Sigma, N, A, and EC. Those are the tyranny. These are what they look like with the connecting vowels. Now we're going to add in contract verbs. So contract verbs plus the connecting vowel.
You know, oh, so the connecting vowel is...
The connecting vowel...
Can, it's going to be different.
Yeah, it depends on...
On the word.
Yeah, this is...
Okay.
Omicron epsilon epsilon omicron epsilon, and then this was omicron also.
Because those are two different words, right? Laleo.
This is luo.
I speak.
This is laleo.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. I speak it. Yeah.
No, this
that's
is
Lego.
Luo. You're thinking of Lego. This
Lego,
is
yes.
This is luo. I lose or destroy.
That's right. That's right.
Loose. Loose clippings.
Now, let me encourage you. Just start your homework right away.
Yeah. I feel good with you, son. I do. The nouns, I really do. I don't know why.
For the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
You. I do. Come next week.
So I would start your homework right away.
Strange.
Try to figure out what the endings are and what the lexical form is. Here's your parsing. Okay? In the translation is, what I said, 1 through 7, right?
1 through 7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
They're not very long sentences.
This is really
okay. All right. God bless you guys. We will get through this, and then we'll get back to understanding forms again. This is just a little morphological sidebar here.
Transforming of the transformers.
Yes.
That's a Dr. Mounts. That's a Dr. Mounts email. Hey, I got a new title for this new lesson. Transform
Morphotron.
There you go. I'm just saying, all the young people will know what he's talking about. We'll better minister to young people. I'm just saying.
You just need to be relevant with their culture.
That's what I'm saying. We're not compromising the message. We need to adapt.
Woo!
There's a difference between principles and methods.
Okay. Thank you for being patient with me.
Sure. Yes.
It's a different class that we have.
What?
Principles and methods. Never fluctuate.